This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, galactic space geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. Today's episode is going to take us to one of those places that regardless of what type of science you like, I think we are all interested in learning more about this place.
Yes, we are, because I know where we're going. Okay, what is the problem that we're solving today?
What's it like to live in Antarctica?
What's it like to live in Antarctica? Oh, this is a place I want to visit someday. Who is our guest today, Jeff?
Our guest today is the very talented, listen to this, polar explorer, deep sea diver, writer, artist, and comics creator, Miss Karen Romano Young.
Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hi, Jeff. Hi, everyone.
Well, thanks so much for being here. I mean, I don't even know where to start, but I do think I'm going to start with the Antarctica thing. Yes. How did you become a polar explorer? Because Jeff just said, and I'm one of those people that's on my bucket list. So talk to us about that.
Well, I guess to talk about Antarctica, I have to first talk about the deep ocean. Because
a great topic. We love that.
I went to the deep ocean with a scientist named Pete Countway, who studies, get this, extremophile microbes, which are tiny little organisms that like extreme conditions. So they like really hot or chemically poisonous or really, really cold. And Pete and I were on a ship that had a submarine called Alvin that was diving to the deep sea.
All right.
And after we got off the ship, Pete went to a new laboratory where he had the opportunity to work on a different kind of extremophile microbe. He'd been looking at the ones at the hydrothermal vents. Now he wanted to look at the ones in Antarctica. We had had a good time working together, telling stories back to shore. And he said, how would you like to go to Antarctica?
Yes,
well,
please.
What would you say?
Both of our hands are in there. Yes, please.
Right there. I'll come. Sure. Yep. When do we go? When do we leave? Yes. So in 2018, I went to Antarctica with Pete's team from the Bigelow Laboratory for Ocean Sciences in Maine. And they were interesting because they were studying these kind of microbes, phytoplankton, that float on top of the ocean all over the world, but a lot in Antarctica. People don't realize that Antarctica is super cloudy. And the reason it's super cloudy is because the water is so alive. So phytoplankton actually produce the smell of the ocean, you know, that briny, salty smell.
Yes, I did not know that.
Yeah, nor did I.
And it's kind of, I'm going to use a word I maybe shouldn't use on radio, and you'll tell me if we have to change it, but plankton farts. when they eat, they fart this stuff out, and it makes that smell of the ocean, but it also becomes something that water particles can hang on to and make clouds.
Okay.
And so they were studying what was going on with cloud formation in Antarctica.
So why does Antarctica have so much phytoplankton?
Well, because the waters are just full of nutrition, and because during the summer, they have absolutely no darkness. So phytoplankton like to take in all this sunshine and turn that into energy. So it's a very good place for them to live. Yeah.
Huh. That makes a lot of sense now.
Yep.
Okay, so how were they studying this? So were you on a ship or did you live in the Antarctica Research Center or whatever?
We lived at a research station on land on the Antarctic Peninsula. The U.S. has three research stations, one at the South Pole, a really big one at McMurdo Station, which is farther south. And then there's one on the peninsula called Palmer Station. that is very tiny. It has at most 45 or 50 people at any given time.
Okay.
That's the most it ever has. And we were staying there, and then we would go out on a small boat and gather water, just bring in big tanks of water so that we could try to grow these plankton on land in a machine that was, you know, kept them at the same temperature, gave them the same sunlight, and even rocked them like babies.
Okay.
Also imitating the wave motion of the ocean to see what the conditions were that they needed. Because of course, conditions are changing in Antarctica.
Right.
And so that's what's going on. So what did they want me there for? Because they needed a lab assistant. One of the main scientists, Patty Matry, who has studied these phytoplankton both at the North Pole and the South Pole, gets seasick. And so they wanted someone who would go out in the boat and gather the stuff and then bring it back to the lab and filter it so that they could look at the phytoplankton close up.
Okay. But
they're invisible. And I'm an artist. And they wanted me to come along so I could help tell their story, because there's no visual way to do it unless I do it in comics. So that was why I was there. I created my comic Antarctic Log, which is a weekly science comic about their work.
Okay.
And also about any kind of climate work that's happening. But I also began writing my book there, the book that's actually having its big book birthday today, Antarctica, the Melting Continent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's based on our going down to Palmer Station and doing all the work that we were doing down there. So you can find out directly about that. But I think you have some questions about it too, right?
Yes, we do. Go ahead, Jeff.
Definitely. First off, I want to ask, I want to go back to the phytoplankton for just a second.
Yeah.
When you brought it back to land, did your experiment work?
Well, yeah. They had been down there the previous year in the complete summer, so sunlight all day long. And now when we went back, it was still late summer when we got there, but into the fall. And they didn't want to go all the way until it was completely dark, which is what winter is like there, because there would be no phytoplankton. But they were looking to see, like, how are they doing? And then they were going to go back and compare it. And they did get a good number of them, enough to figure out what kind of conditions they needed. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how cold was it down there, right?
Like, well, it's funny because you'd think, you picture minus 79 degrees Fahrenheit, yes, or something like that. That's more like how it is at the South Pole. And it can be colder and it can be super windy and super dark. But most of the days that I was there, it was 10 degrees to 32 degrees, but wasn't that cold, wasn't that much colder than Connecticut in January.
No. Sounds right.
Yeah.
But you're in a much cooler place, right?
Oh,
as a more
goodness.
Exciting place.
Incredibly gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. It does not disappoint. And even when you think, okay, I'm seeing completely snow-covered mountains, and I can tell that no human has ever stepped on them. And gorgeous ocean full of whales spouting and penguins arcing through, like you see dolphins arcing through that.
Right.
Penguins
do that too. And seals all over the place and just so much stuff going on. And you think, wow, this is really big. This is really huge. And then Pete points out to me this tiny little thing that looks like a stick on the shore and tells me that it's a massive radio tower and that it's part of a now not used research station. And that little tiny stick with the mountain behind it, these are massive snow-covered mountains. It was just so incredibly beautiful. Gorgeous. Every color, blue and white, greens. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Having spent that time in Antarctica, you were telling us how you went out on the boats and you were collecting water there.
Yes.
Did you do much exploring on the land?
Yeah, we were allowed to go out and go within a certain radius of the station.
Makes sense.
Yes. There is a glacier behind the station. And they had it all marked out. Don't go over here because there might be crevasses and you might fall in and die.
Or that's good to know.
Or don't go to this other part because it's got too much ice and it might calve off the glacier and you would die. Or don't go over here, or it's because it's too steep and it's too slippery and you could die. And you know,
so, I'm hearing a pattern here.
It's definitely not a continent that's set up to be hospitable to people. We've made it so, but so they had flags planted, green flags all up the glacier. And if you followed the green flags, you would be in a reasonably safe space as long as you have crampons on your feet. And as long as you have poles to dig in with, as long as you had a radio in case you got in trouble so you could call for help, as long as you had a ton of layers of clothes on.
So I imagine Walt Disney World Antarctica is not coming anytime soon.
No, although I think that people would love it. It's really amazing to see how people are transformed by this place.
Oh my God.
You give your heart. And when you leave, there's always a part of you that's still in the ice. It's unusual for someone not to feel like that. And everyone cries when they leave. It's beautiful. Nice. It really is wonderful.
I mean, you listed a bunch of animals, but was there any particular animal that you saw that you were surprised to find or you just thought was so amazing?
Well, one time I was just standing on the wharf and looking at the water and looking across at the point, and someone knocked on the window in the lab behind me up a couple stories. And I looked back up and they did this big L on the top of their head, which does not mean loser. It means leopard seal. And I looked into the water and here comes this huge leopard seal. Now they're really big. They can sometimes win a battle with orca. They're
really,
they have a million bitey teeth and bitey teeth, scientific phrase, but it was swimming away from me. And I just automatically said, come back. And it came back.
Oh my goodness.
And it's dead. Yeah, right. And I'm standing there on this wharf doing this totally instinctual, how far can it jump and how far down is the water and how fast can I run? And I just had this, I've never had that feeling of I am actually prey situation.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh my gosh.
But that was one. And so I said, go away. And it went. So, I don't know. I mean,
kids don't do this at home, right?
No. It was curious about me too. We also went one day, we could go out on Sunday afternoons. We had some leisure time and people would borrow boats and set up little trips and say, we're going to go over to, you know, so-and-so and you can come along, sign up. And I went over to, they call it Old Palmer, which is where they camped out while they were building Palmer Station, which was just like, imagine, like, we're just going to go camp out in Antarctica while we build a whole building. You know,
somebody had to do it.
That sounds cold.
Yes. So we went over there and we could climb up and go kind of behind the coastline to where there was this sheltered place where elephant seals were. And they were huge and cool and making all kinds of snorty sounds and sleeping and fighting and doing all their things. And that was really impressive too. Really, really cool.
Oh, wow.
So you got to experience these huge animals, but you were also there to study the tiniest of animals.
Yes, exactly.
Phytoplankton.
So weird.
So I want to ask sort of a really big question, and I hope you have a small enough answer for our podcast. you said earlier that they brought you along to help tell their story.
Yes.
And now we've talked about, you started us in the deep ocean and we understand that you're a polar explorer and you've had from the tiniest phytoplankton up to these enormous elephant seals. What is the story of Antarctica?
The story of Antarctica is how vitally important it is to the rest of the world. Which you might think, well, who cares? It's just down there. It's just frozen. I'm not that interested. Maybe I'll go there because I like penguins. But the fact that because it's surrounded completely by ocean and the ocean goes all the way around the world, that is why it's all frozen, because it's shut off from the rest of the world. But all those icebergs that calve off the continent and then go north have a big impact on the rest of the ocean. And so that's why people are paying attention to it. So I started talking about what we were wearing to stay warm and about ice fish, which have clear blood. There's so many strange things there.
Wow.
What it's like to scuba dive there, all these things. And in my comics, and then just kept on telling those stories because there's no end of stories of the scientists that go down and have these incredible experiences just doing all these different things.
Oh, sure. That sounds amazing. So give us a little preview of one of your comics. I'm curious about the fish that have clear blood. Is that
really weird, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So really weird.
They don't really know why, because there are lots of things that do live in the really, really cold water, and they figured out they have a kind of antifreeze, and the ice fish have that also. But basically, your blood is red because it's so full of oxygen.
Yes.
And so if it's clear, where do you get oxygen from? And they figured out that they're getting it through their skin. And there's just, it's just sort of a missing link. And so they're studying them to kind of figure out, well, how come they went that way when everyone else went toward having red blood? And are they weaker because of that? And are they more vulnerable or less vulnerable? And can we learn something?
Or are they stronger and we can learn something from them too, right?
Yeah. Yep. So,
wow, these are all critical thinking, problem solving things, right?
Well, totally. And what I really love about that is that nobody knows. And that's what I figured out that scientists are really interested in is, you think, oh, they're really brilliant and they go everywhere and they know everything and they're geeky and they'll tell you just all this information. But that's not what they're interested in. They're interested in the place where they get to that they don't know the answer. Yes. That's when they get excited. Okay. So figuring out where you're dumb or figuring out where, okay, I know everything else, but I don't get this part. And asking questions about that and digging into that. That's the critical thinking that scientists are doing that I have.
Okay. So are you factoring that into your comics?
I do. I talk about it a lot because I'm not a scientist myself. I'm a writer and an artist. And so imagine how I feel when people are sitting around talking about phytoplankton and phaeocystis and dimethylsulfonylpropionate, which is another word for phytoplankton farts. And I'm just sitting there going, okay, I'll figure out what they're talking about later. Don't worry. Just keep smiling. But I have realized that they're really okay with that. I've learned so much from them about how to learn and how to approach your own learning and how to be fine about not knowing things and how to proceed with that. That's been a huge education for me.
Yeah. And I found that too. And I think that that's a really important thing for people of all ages to understand that you don't have to know everything. Just be curious, ask questions, and go look stuff up if you don't understand it.
Yeah. Or ask somebody. The cool thing about being able to travel and work with scientists is that there's always somebody who either wants to try to figure that out with you if they don't know the answer, or who does know something or says, well, here's some stuff that I know about that, but here's the missing piece that we're trying to discover. And it's a great feeling. It sounds really funny, but if I come up with a question that they're asking too, I feel smart. I feel like, okay, well, oh, nobody knows that. It's not just me. It's a wonderful thing to find out about.
Nice. I like that. So earlier on, you did mention we went back to phytoplankton and other exploring. You did mention that you have a book about Antarctica that is about to have a book birthday. Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Yeah, Antarctica, the Melting Continent, is about my trip to Palmer Station. Okay. It's also about a later trip that I took aboard a ship that just went to the Amundsen Sea. We didn't ever go on land, but we were doing all kinds of work out to sea. Okay. And in it, I talk about what we were all doing down there, but also talk to a whole lot of other scientists from around the world about what they're looking at down there and the questions that they're asking and the places that they travel. I'm also looking at all the different animals that are down there and all the different research stations from all the different countries. There's a lot going on in this book, and it's been really fun to do.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we've had Aquanauts on talk about going down in Aquarius, you know, which is very small. Yeah. You can only handle, what, 6-8 people? Not a whole lot. It's a small team. So tell us, what's it like in one of these stations? Do you have your own bedroom? Are there bunk beds? Do you cook food? I'm curious about, is it a normal day? You just walk outside and it's really, really cold.
There's a bunch of buildings, not a bunch, but maybe half a dozen buildings. They're all connected by boardwalks so that you have railings to hold on to because it gets really windy. And also sometimes if the snow falls, you can be blinded in the snow and you need to have something to hold on to.
Oh,
and they're all decorated with Christmas lights so you can see where you're going. And I did have a dorm. We had a dorm and I had a roommate and we were in bunk beds and I was in the bottom bunk. And we had a lab that was, so the lab downstairs with an aquarium and like everybody from the scuba bringing in, or like the ice fish trip, they brought them all into the aquarium. So that was right near me. So people were always walking by me with big buckets of fish and things like that. And you had to be careful if you walked out the door, because sometimes there would be crab eater seals just like lying on our porch, and you're not allowed to get near them. So you'd have to go out the other door. And upstairs was our galley where we had wonderful food. They bring incredible chefs down there, and they tell the chefs that they're there for 6 months and it's their chance to experiment with lots of things. So like when I went, our chef brought her own sourdough starter. And, you know, just like this bubbling thing in a jar that she then used to make bread rise. And she was experimenting with yeast breads the whole time we were there. And we were the lucky recipients.
Nice. Yes.
But on Saturday and Sunday, you're on your own for cooking. And they leave all kinds of things in the refrigerator. And you can go and just kind of put anything together. You can scramble yourself an egg or anything that you want to do. And people will cook food for each other and for themselves during those days. And then the chef gets a break too.
That's fun.
Really fun.
Okay.
Yeah. And we had movies that we could all watch together. And we had talks where scientists would get up and tell us all their things. And we had an open mic night. And, you know, if you're in Antarctica, as it has been since the beginning of the explorers, you're highly valued if you can play a musical instrument or sing or tell jokes or anything like that. So nice. We had a lot of fun. Yes.
How long was your trip down there?
I was there for 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a long vacation.
It is. It was not long enough.
I was going to say, it sounds like a pretty amazing one.
Yeah, it was fabulous. I would go back in a heartbeat.
So with all of the information and how important Antarctica is and all the science that's happening down there, for the next, say, 10 or 20 or 50 years, what do you believe is going to be the most important thing for our younger listeners to be learning and understand about that continent down at the bottom of the planet?
Well, I think they've probably heard the message a lot of times already that what's happening in Antarctica is what's going to happen everywhere else. When I was there, there were islands that were out off the coast. And when you'd say, what's the name of that island? They were named after scientists that were right next to me at dinner.
Wow.
And I said, well, how did that happen? And it was because they had been there for a few years and the glacier has receded at least a quarter mile. So it, you know, used to come right up to the back door of the station, and now it's muddy and dirt back a quarter of a mile. And so all of that ice has receded and revealed what maybe they thought were rocks or peninsulas to be islands. And so when they could see that they were islands, they named them after the person sitting next to them, you know, Jennifer Island. And it's really like that.
That would work.
Right. And that was startling to realize, wow, that was like only 10 years ago. And so we know that it's going to keep on going. And I think kids already know that it's going to keep on going. What's important to know about Antarctica is how little we know about it.
Yeah.
We've really only been studying it for about 50 years, and that's nothing. And it's changing so fast. We need more researchers. We need more people who are willing to go there and do some research and study and ask the questions and get the answers so that we can figure out what's going on now and understand what's going to go on in the future.
Yeah, that sounds great. And that kind of leads us into your pandemic project, right? Tell everybody about what your part that you're doing to get kids interested in being a scientist or engineer.
Well, I work a lot with kids because I write books and I talk to them about science. And I've realized that a lot of kids don't think that science has a place for them. You know, maybe because they didn't get a good grade on their last quiz, or maybe because they think it's boring and not interesting, or they just don't know, what do I have to do in high school? What do I have to do in middle school to get to be someone who goes to Antarctica and does research? And so I began talking to people in the field who are already doing it about how they got to where they are and what they were like as kids. And, you know, what were you like as a kid? What were you interested in? What did you do to get to where you are? And then to tell those stories in comics. And the project is called I Was a Kid.
That's awesome. I like all of that.
So there's comics, there's audio, there's video, there's all kinds of information about all of these people, and I'm adding more all the time. and it's at iwasakid.com.
And that sounds very similar to what we're trying to do here too, right, Jeff? Mm-hmm.
Yes, very much so. And so thank you. Just want to repeat that. That was iwasakid.com.
Yeah.
We definitely have to check that out and we will include that. Man, I could keep asking you questions about that time in the Antarctic. I am just like Jennifer. If somebody asked me to go, yeah, I would say exactly what you did, Miss Karen, of when do we leave? What do I do?
Yes, exactly.
And I will go buy warmer stuff. But this is going to be super interesting. We have reached the point in the show where we ask our guests if you brought a challenge for our listeners. And I am dying to know what yours is.
I did. I love to draw. And I like to draw things that I don't necessarily know what they are. And so when I got to Palmer Station, I took a picture from the back of the ship before I even got off the ship at the station that just showed everything.
Right.
And then I drew it and I didn't know what everything was. There'd be like a little house that was over here on the rocks. Okay. What is that for? Or there's a big tank. Well, what's in that tank? I don't really know.
Right.
So I like to draw things that lead me to questions. And then
I like that.
The finished drawings. I drew it on black and white and I drew all, added all the colors in. And then I carried the drawing around the whole research station and went into every building and found out what they were and who worked there.
Nice.
Wow. You see them in the dining hall, but you don't know who they are. You're an electrician. Well, what building do you work in? Well, what do you do? What does an electrician do at Palmer Station? Or you're the trash guy? What does the trash guy do? You know, or what all the different people are who are down there. And I also found out all the animals and I drew them. All the boats were and what they were used for. Anything that I could see in my picture, I went and found out what it was. So my challenge is, I mean, you can do this with something that's in front of you on your desk. I've done it with scissors and you just draw, you know, like you think you know what scissors look like, right? Well, try drawing them without looking at them and figure out what is the part that you don't know. Or try drawing your cat and figure out, well, okay, I know how the ears go, but I don't know how the legs go. And so it's a way to kind of lead yourself into the area where you might feel dumb. And then to get through that dumb feeling to now I know. So now I've gone and looked closer and I've drawn it. And if you're doing something complicated like a research station or like a submarine, you can then go to somewhere else and say, well, first of all, you're going to figure out a lot by drawing it.
Yes.
You say, well, that's a hose. Yes. I wonder what that hose has inside it. Or that's a camera. I wonder what it's supposed to take pictures of, you know, that kind of thing. And you'll know a lot more than you think you do. And then you'll have good amount of questions to go and ask an expert or research yourself.
Well, I think you just opened the door for our listeners into an activity that they've probably never done in that depth before. I think that's going to be great.
I think it's going to be lots of fun.
Well, Embrace the dumb.
This has been fabulous. Thank you so much for being on Solve for Kids, Karen.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer and Jeff. It's been really exciting talking to you.
What a fun conversation. I definitely want to go to Antarctica to learn more about this myself. But what about that challenge? I am fascinated with this challenge of drawing a scene and then going to learn about everything that you drew.
Yeah, I think that's really fun. And it's a great way to add art to science, which we've talked about on the show before too. But oh my gosh, I would love to go to Antarctica. Of course, I'd have to wear one of those jackets that has the heater inside because I get very, very cold. But think of all the animals you would get to see. How cool, yes, pun intended, would that be?
Very cool indeed, pun intended, of course. But the draw, the allure, and the intrigue of an entire continent of ice, and we are still, as you heard Karen say, we are still learning so much about information humans have never learned before about Antarctica.
Yes, that's what's really amazing. Okay, so we want you all to do the drawing or just share with us a really cool tip or piece of information that you learned from this podcast. You can tag us on our social media. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or you can go to our website, solveforkids.com, look up this episode podcast page, and leave us a comment there. Plus, you get to see some really cool pictures that Karen's going to provide us of Antarctica. You won't want to miss those.
No, those are going to be fabulous. And until you see us next time, we're going to leave Jennifer in Florida so she doesn't need a jacket that's got a heater in it. So catch us on Solve It for Kids next time at Solve It for Kids.